Just so you have the name straight, that's actually Ben Sorensen, not Chase. Thank you so much for being our reader this morning. You've been waiting for it, right? You just wanted one more week in the book of Job. I know it. I admit it's been an awfully long time to be in the place that Job's story takes us, but I think that there's something powerful to be learned for us people of faith in the story of Job. I saw a sculpture a few years ago in a modern art gallery that made me think of this story. It's by Ron Muick, who's an Australian artist who does hyper-realistic sculptures. And when I saw this sculpture in a gallery, I instantly thought, it's Job. The man looks so desperately alone, so at sea. You can't tell maybe from this view that he's sitting inside a boat. His eyes seem to me to be red from crying. You notice there's no one else in the boat with him. He is totally alone. There isn't even a paddle in the boat with him. He's so vulnerable, totally naked, totally exposed, nothing to protect him. He seems like a man who's lost everything to me. But it's not Job. When I went up to look at the plaque that had the title of the piece on it, it simply said, "Man in a Boat." It could just be man. For how powerfully this image speaks to the experience of every man. At first, it seemed to speak to me of the experience of the middle-aged man, because that's who we see in the picture. But the artist gets us to see this man in a way we never see men around us. Most of us see middle-aged men in suits, looking as though they're at the prime of their lives, the pinnacle of their game. But Muick gives us a way to see man anew. You see how his muscles have started to lose their tone. It gives you a sense that he's starting to enter middle age. He doesn't seem to be clear about where he's going. He can't see, almost like he's in a fog. He seems to me to be a little fearful of the future. He's carrying a lot of tension. You can see in the tautness of those sinews of his neck. And his arms are crossed in a defensive posture. He's closed himself off, trying to protect himself from whatever is out there. I think maybe that's how it feels to reach the middle of life and find that what you've been pursuing for all these years isn't really leading you anywhere. It's the feeling perhaps that parents have when their children leave home, or when a man loses his wife to cancer, or when a mother loses a child in utero, or when divorce comes after years of trying to make a marriage work. Atul Gawande, the author of Being Mortal, the book that we're recommending that our community read, talks about the vulnerability of the aging in acute detail. He describes at one point in his book a woman who could be any woman as she visits her doctor. The first thing she mentions is lower back pain. Shoots down her leg and sometimes makes it difficult for her to stand up out of bed or out of a chair. She also has really bad arthritis. When the doctor asks her to see her feet, she has a difficult time, barely can get her shoes off. Her fingers are so swollen at the knuckles and they're bent out to the sides. She's had both knees replaced already. She has high blood pressure from stress. She has glaucoma. She's beginning to deal with incontinence. She's also had surgery for colon cancer, and now she has a suspicious-looking nodule on her lung that needs to be biopsied. She's dealing with all of these problems, and she lives alone. Her husband died 23 years ago. If we live long enough, all of us will start losing things, not the least of which is the people that we love. We'll lose our hearing, our vision, the ease of mobility we take for granted in our youth. We may lose our ability to control our bladders or our bowels. We'll have health issues like hers, pick one or several: high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, cancer, arthritis, dementia. Aging will leave us feeling pretty isolated and alone. It's a boat all of us will sail if we live long enough. Henry Nouwen describes how all of us can end up at sea at any stage of life simply because of the culture we live in. At issue, Nouwen says, is the question, to whom do I belong, to God or to the world? Many of my daily preoccupations suggest that I belong more to the world than to God. A little criticism makes me angry. A little rejection makes me depressed. A little praise raises my spirits, and a little success excites me. Often, I am like a small boat on the ocean, completely at the mercy of the waves. The kind of vulnerability and fear that we see in Muick's art comes from real experiences that all people have of pain, suffering, hurt, loss, rejection, or simple insufficiency when we compare our lives to the lives of others. That's perhaps why the book of Job has been so essential to people of faith for centuries. It is the story of every man. I don't think that there ever was a real Job, but rather that the world is full of us Jobs who are so prone to lostness or at-sea-ness throughout our lives, not just men, but women too. But Job teaches us people of faith a few things about weathering the frightening voyage of life. In the end, there is nothing to cling to except our relationship with God. Job teaches us that even our dearest friends can't get us through disaster. They can't stand to be in the boat with us because they're dealing with their own boats, their own fears. Those friends who were supposed to be comforting Job and praying for Job, they failed miserably because they didn't speak to God for Job. Instead, they tried to speak to Job about God, and they didn't know of whom they spoke. So in the end, God tells them that he'll have Job pray for them. That's how our God works. God will be in the boat with us even when we can't see him there, even when we're prone to blaming him for putting us there, even when we misrepresent him to others like Job's friends did. But this last part of the story shows us something not just of God, but of Job, the man of God. He's the one who Candy told you last week repented of sackcloth and ashes. He turned away from grief and mourning to accept the life that God willed for him still. Viktor Frankl, the Holocaust survivor who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, said, ultimately, man should not ask what the meaning of life is, but rather must realize that it is he who is asked. In a word, each man is questioned by life, and he can only answer to life by answering for his own life. To life, he can only respond by being responsible. Ellen Davis, the author of Getting Involved with God, is the one who helped me see that in the end, it wasn't God's act of blessing that was so surprising, his blessing Job with more possessions, with more children. What was surprising at the end of the story is that Job was willing to bear the cost of engaging in life again, of becoming a father again, opening himself up to the terrible vulnerability of loving those whom he cannot protect against suffering and untimely death. By the end of the story, it's Job who has changed. He's not afraid to live life, even if he can't predict the outcome, even if the future is frightening, even if he doesn't have the answers to all of life's questions. People of faith live life in spite of how tough life is. We see these examples all around us of faithful people moving forward through their pain. Philando Castile's family showed us how to live with unbearable grief. They put on aprons and served up a meal to people they didn't even know on the day of their beloved one's funeral. Patty Wetterling devoted herself to the protection of other children after her son Jacob was abducted. The woman who introduced Barack Obama at the convention a week ago, I think the most memorable speech in all of the speeches I listened to from both of those conventions, her son was killed in Afghanistan, something that we cannot imagine if we haven't lived through such pain. But she noticed other boats out on the water. She noticed that the children in her school district didn't have the resources they needed. And so she ran for school board in her 70s. She told the audience the night she spoke that she didn't want to go knocking on doors. Her arthritis made her hips so stiff it hurt to walk, and she knew she needed to. So she almost talked herself out of campaigning for that school board role. But she did it anyway, and she said, in the end, walking was really good for her to help alleviate the pain. Even in today's newspaper, you'll read on the front page of the Pioneer Press about how Tom and Carol Inslee's son suffered a severe brain injury. They lost one son in a car accident. The other one was so damaged that he can't speak, cannot care for himself. And they're devoting themselves to raising the funds to build a home for young people who are brain damaged, because it's a new thing for our society to deal with. Medical technology can keep people alive today who weren't able to live beyond trauma in the past. And so they're helping our community find a way forward. I don't know that God will bless any of us in the way that the story tells us he blessed Job. But I think what we learn is that blessings come maybe to us, but certainly through us. When we continue sailing in spite of the fear and in spite of the pain and in spite of not knowing what the future will hold. There is a prayer, I don't know the source, but I'd like to share it with you, that I think helps us imagine how there is always a way forward, even when we feel like this. A way that can be transforming for us and for others. And I'd like to share it with you. Lord, when I'm famished, give me someone who needs food. When I am thirsty, send me someone who needs water. When I am cold, bring me someone to warm. When I am hurting, send me someone to console. When my cross becomes heavy, give me another's cross to share. When I am poor, lead someone needy to me. When I have no time, give me someone to help for a moment. When I am humiliated, give me someone to praise. When I am discouraged, send me someone to encourage. When I need another's understanding, give me someone who needs mine. When I need someone to take care of me, send me someone to care for. When I dwell upon myself, turn my heart toward another. in God's hands. We can be transformed by the painful experiences of life. Job was. We also can be. We get this tiny sign at the end of Job when we hear that he had 7 more sons and 3 daughters. Though the sons aren't named in Scripture, the daughters are named, which is highly unusual in Scripture. They're named to us and their beauty described: Jemima, Keziah, and Keren Hapuk. And we learn that their father, Job, gave them an inheritance along with their brothers. So Job, who was once so sure about everything, so sure about following the rules, crossing his T's, dotting his I's, so sure about everything, now breaks the rules of a patriarchal society to bless not only his sons, but his daughters as well. He has learned throughout his life's voyage to be as wildly generous as God is to all of his children. Now that is a happy ending. Thanks be to God.